All right, so we're diving into something pretty intense today. Revelation chapters 12 and 13.
Yeah, those are some pretty wild chapters.
Definitely. And they're often considered some of the most challenging in the Bible.
Hmm.
But that's what we're here for, right? To dig deep and make sense of it all.
Absolutely. I think we can definitely unpack the symbolism, historical context, and really get to the heart of what thy author, John, was trying to communicate to his original audience.
And that's the key, isn't it? Understanding what John was saying to those first century Christians.
Totally. Because once we get that, we can start to see how it resonates with us today. And trust me, it does resonate.
Oh, absolutely. It's timeless. But before we jump into all that, maybe we should introduce the main players in this narrative.
Yeah, good point. Who are we dealing with here?
Well, we've got the woman, the dragon, and then not one, but two beasts.
Oh, yeah. Can't forget about those beasts.
Definitely not. And they're all symbolic. So figuring out what they represent is super important to understanding these chapters.
It's like a giant puzzle, and those symbols are the key pieces.
Exactly. Okay, so before we get lost in the symbolism, let's set the stage. Where are we historically speaking? What's going on when John's writing this?
Well, John was writing to seven churches in Asia Minor. That's modern day Turkey for those listening.
Uh-huh. And what was life like for those churches?
They were under a ton of pressure. I mean, imagine being a Christian back then. The Roman Empire was everywhere, and they were expected to conform to Roman culture.
Right. And Roman culture included things like emperor worship, which was a big no-no for Christians.
Huge no-no. And that could actually cost you your life, your faith, that is.
It's hard to even imagine that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
So knowing this historical context, how does that help us understand what John is trying to say in these chapters?
Well, think about it. You're one of those early Christians, right? You're surrounded by this incredibly powerful Roman Empire, and you're being asked to choose.
Yeah, to choose between your faith and your safety.
Exactly. Loyalty to Christ or conforming to Roman demands, it was a life or death decision for many.
Wow. So that tension between faith and conformity is at the heart of what John's writing about.
You got it. Now, chapter 12 kicks off with this really striking image. A woman.
The woman, right. Clearly a big deal. But who is she? What does she represent?
Well, most scholars agree that the woman symbolizes God's people. Initially, she's connected with Israel, but as the chapter unfolds, she kind of transitions to represent the church.
The church.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning like all believers, both Jewish and Gentile?
Yeah, all of them. All those who follow Jesus.
So as a follower of Jesus, I'm part of this woman that the dragon is trying to attack. It's a little unnerving when you put it like that.
It is. And it gets even more intense when you realize who this dragon is, because it's none other than Satan himself.
Satan. Like the serpent from the Garden of Eden?
The one and only. John is actually connecting that story of deception in Genesis with the spiritual battles that believers face.
Wow. So it's not just some random monster story. It's a continuation of this age-old conflict between good and evil.
Exactly. It's a spiritual reality. And John's weaving together threads from the Old Testament, the story of Jesus, to create this incredibly powerful message for his audience.
Yeah, a message that still speaks to us today, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, besides the woman, we also have this child who's destined to rule the nations.
With an iron scepter, no less.
Yeah, no messing around. It's pretty clear this is Jesus, right?
It seems that way.
John is drawing imagery from Psalm 2 here, portraying Jesus as the Messiah, the one who will ultimately conquer evil. And what happens to this child? He's snatched away from the dragon and ascends to heaven.
Mirroring Jesus' resurrection and ascension.
Exactly. So even though it might seem like the dragon is winning at first, we know that's not the end of the story.
We know who wins in the end.
Yeah.
But things take a turn for the dramatic after that, don't they?
Oh, yeah. John describes this epic battle in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting the dragon and his forces. It's wild. And in the end, Satan is defeated and thrown down to earth.
Angelic warfare. Talk about intense imagery. But if Satan is defeated, why is he still around causing trouble?
That's the thing. This defeat doesn't completely eliminate Satan's power. He's still active in the world, but his time is limited. And knowing this, he becomes even more enraged and even more determined to attack the woman and her offspring.
And her offspring are believers, right?
All believers, yes. So even though Satan has ultimately lost, he's still a force to be reckoned with in this world.
Okay, now I'm starting to see how this connects to my own life. I know Jesus has won the ultimate victory, but I still face challenges and spiritual battles every day.
That's exactly the point John is making. The Christian life isn't always easy. It's a battle. But we have the assurance that we're not fighting alone. We have the victory of Christ on our side.
That's encouraging. Well, this brings us to another interesting point. The woman is protected in the desert, which represents God's protection, but her offspring are vulnerable to the dragon's attacks. How can both of these things be true at the same time?
It's a paradox, isn't it? But it reflects the reality of the Christian experience. On a spiritual level, we are secure in God's care. But in this world, we will face trials and persecution.
So we're both protected and persecuted.
Exactly. It's this tension that John is highlighting. And it's a tension that I think we all feel at times.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Knowing that I have security in God, but also knowing that I'm going to face challenges in this life. It's a bit of a paradox, like you said.
It is. And that leads us into chapter 13 and the arrival of those two beasts we mentioned earlier.
The beasts. All right, I guess we'll have to save those for next time. But I'm definitely intrigued. I want to know what these terrifying figures represent and how they connect to the dragon's sinister agenda.
We'll definitely unpack all of that. And trust me, it's going to get even wilder.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Thanks for listening, everyone, and be sure to join us next time for part two of our deep dive into Revelation, chapters 12 and 13. We'll pick up right where we left off, exploring those beasts and what they mean for us today.
See you then. All right, welcome back to our deep dive into Revelation, chapters 12 and 13. We've got a lot to cover, so let's jump right back in.
Yeah, last time we were talking about the woman representing God's people protected in the desert, but her offspring, believers, they're still vulnerable to the dragon's attacks, right?
Yeah, it's a powerful picture of that spiritual reality we face. We can find that safety and refuge in God, but we're also called to engage in the battles of this world. It's a tough balance.
It is. And speaking of battles, that brings us to chapter 13, where things get even more intense with the arrival of not one, but two terrifying beasts.
It's like just when you thought it couldn't get any wilder, John throws these beasts into the mix.
Yeah, talk about an escalation. So who are these beasts and what makes them so scary?
Well, the first beast rises from the sea, a symbol of immense power. Most scholars see it as representing the Roman Empire itself, maybe even the emperor himself, demanding worship, enforcing its will through violence, you know, classic tyrant stuff.
So John is taking this image that many people at the time associated with peace and prosperity, the Roman Empire, and showing its true nature, huh? A monstrous force fueled by the dragon, by Satan himself.
Exactly. John is urging his audience to look beyond the facade, to see the spiritual darkness lurking beneath the surface.
It's like he's saying, don't be fooled by appearances. There are forces at work that want to control you, that demand your allegiance, and ultimately to separate you from God.
Absolutely. Don't drink the Kool-Aid, basically.
Right. And then we have the second beast. This one emerges from the land, a little trickier to pin down, but it seems to represent the local authorities, the individuals who enforced Roman rule and promoted emperor worship. They were the ones on the ground carrying out the will of the first beast.
Yeah, they're like the enforcers. Maybe not as flashy or powerful as the first beast, but they were incredibly effective.
I can see how that would have been especially frightening for those early Christians. I mean, it's one thing to face outright persecution, but it's another to be constantly pressured and manipulated into betraying your beliefs. It's insidious.
It is. And the second beast doesn't just use pressure tactics. He also performs deceptive miracles.
Miracles? Like what?
You know, even making fire come down from heaven, that sort of thing.
Wow. Talk about a power move. But it's straight out of the dragon's playbook, isn't it? A reminder that deception is one of Satan's most powerful weapons. He can make things look good, even holy, when they're actually leading people away from God.
Exactly. And this brings us to the most infamous symbol in these chapters, the mark of the beast, 666.
Ah, yes, 666, the number that launched 1,000 conspiracy theories. We couldn't have a deep dive into Revelation without talking about it. But what's the real meaning behind this mysterious number?
Well, first of all, it's not about modern day conspiracy theories or trying to predict the future. In John's time, receiving the mark was a deliberate act of allegiance to the beast and his system. It was the opposite of the seal of God given to believers.
So it's about choosing sides. You're either aligned with God or with the beast and his system of control and oppression. There's no middle ground.
Precisely. Now, there are a couple of interpretations for the number itself. One is that it's a coded reference to the Roman Emperor Nero, infamous for his cruelty towards Christians.
So Nero becomes this archetype of the tyrannical ruler who opposes God. Makes sense.
Right. The other interpretation is that 666 represents imperfection and opposition to God, contrasted with the perfection symbolized by the number 7.
7 being the number of completion, of wholeness.
Exactly. Either way, the message is clear. Choosing the beast means rejecting God and embracing a system that's fundamentally opposed to his will. And that's a choice with eternal consequences.
This is heavy stuff, but it's also really encouraging, you know? I mean, it reminds us that even in the face of these powerful forces, God is ultimately in control and will vindicate his people.
You got it. But how does all this apply to us today? We're not facing Roman emperors or forced emperor worship, so what's the relevance for our lives? That's the big question we'll tackle in part three.
All right, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Revelation 12 and 13. We've encountered some seriously intense imagery. A woman, a dragon, two terrifying beasts, and the infamous 666. It's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, no kidding. But as we've seen, these symbols aren't just random elements of some bizarre apocalyptic story. They represent very real spiritual forces, challenges faced by John's original audience. Those early Christians living under Roman rule, they were going through it.
Yeah, they were. And at the end of part two, you left us with a pretty big question. How do these ancient symbols and warnings apply to our lives today?
Right. Because let's face it, we're not exactly facing Roman emperors demanding to be worshipped. So what's the relevance for us in the 21st century?
Exactly. It feels so far removed from our daily lives.
It might seem that way. But the beauty of Revelation, I think, is that while it speaks directly to a specific historical context, its message transcends time and culture. It's still relevant.
Okay, I like that. Unpack a bit more for me. What's the core message we can apply to our lives today?
At its heart, Revelation 12 and 13 reveal this spiritual battle raging around us, often disguised behind seemingly harmless structures or ideologies. Just like that Roman Empire was portrayed as this monstrous beast demanding allegiance, we need to be aware of the modern-day beast that might be seeking to control us, to pull us away from God.
So you're saying there are modern-day equivalents to these beasts? But they might not be as obvious as a giant empire with a conquering army.
Exactly. It's more subtle, more insidious. Think about the systems and ideologies that dominate our culture today.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Well, think about the pressures we face to conform. What subtle messages are being communicated that might conflict with our faith?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It could be anything. Consumerism, pursuit of wealth and status. Political ideologies or social movements that demand absolute loyalty, all those things.
It's definitely a challenge to be discerning, to look beyond the surface and recognize those potential spiritual forces at play. Not easy.
You're telling me we need to be asking ourselves constantly, what am I giving my allegiance to? Where do my true loyalties lie? And what compromises am I being asked to make that might actually conflict with my faith?
It's about recognizing those subtle ways we might be tempted to conform to the patterns of this world rather than the ways of God, like those little compromises we make without even thinking about it.
Exactly. It's often in those subtle everyday situations that we face the most challenging spiritual battles.
It's true. You know, this is making me think about all the times I've felt pressure to go along with something that just didn't sit right with me.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's at work, in my social circles, even just scrolling through social media. There's this constant pressure to conform, to fit in, to not rock the boat. It's exhausting.
I hear you. And remember, the dragon's primary weapon, it's deception. He can use our own desires, fears, insecurities to lead us astray just as easily as those external pressures. It's sneaky.
So true. So if we're constantly facing these subtle battles, how do we resist? What's the antidote to all this deception?
Well, even in the midst of those terrifying images, John's message is one of hope and perseverance. Remember, the woman's offspring.
Yeah, those who follow Jesus, they're vulnerable, but ultimately victorious because of Christ's triumph over evil.
Right. And that victory is available to all of us. We don't have to fight this battle alone.
We have the power of the Holy Spirit within us, giving us strength and guiding us.
Absolutely. We need to cultivate that deep connection with God through prayer, studying his word, surrounding ourselves with a supportive community of believers.
Think of that desert where the woman is protected. It can be a picture of our relationship with God, our safe space in the middle of all the chaos.
Love that. It's not about withdrawing from the world entirely, becoming hermits or anything. It's about finding that inner sanctuary where we can connect with God, draw strength from him so we can face whatever battles come our way.
That's a beautiful image. So powerful.
It is. And just as John encouraged his audience to see their struggles through the lens of God's bigger story, we can do the same.
Find hope and perspective, knowing that our battles, both internal and external, are part of this much grander narrative.
A narrative that ultimately ends in victory for those who remain faithful. That's the key.
That's the hope we cling to. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Revelation 12 and 13.
It's been a wild ride.
It has. We hope this has helped you to not just understand these challenging chapters, but also apply their timeless message to your own life.
Because it's not just ancient history, it's about today. It's about us.
Exactly. So keep seeking truth, stay connected to God, and remember, you're not alone in this battle.